You are listening to the Sheep Guarding Llama podcast for October the 24th, 2005, Monday, and this is episode 9. We're very glad to be able to bring you our 9th episode. We are coming up on pretty close to 3 hours of total content now for the SGL podcast, which is extremely exciting. I am Scott Miller, and I will be your host. Thanks, everyone, for listening. First news, we're actually going to, I mentioned this last time, we're actually going to try another poem, see what people think. Today's poem is contributed by Ray Miller, and if he wants to get a hold of us and have us take this off the show, he can. If you want to contact him directly, you can contact him, ray.miller@mnco.com. That's ray.miller@marynancycharlieomicron.com. I'm not sure what the actual words are for each of the letters, but that's close enough. And our poem for the day is Not Really Fair, Is It? Elvis Presley and Mr. Ed were weird and fabulous. Now they're dead. They both lived and died in celebrity's glare. By the time they passed on, they were both kind of square. They both loved their mothers. They both acted bad. Mr. Ed fought with Wilbur. Elvis bugged Aunt Margaret's dad. But Elvis rocks on in the beautiful blue, and poor Mr. Ed was boiled down for glue. I guess it's okay, because a horse is a horse, but the king is the king. Of course, of course. And you're probably all wondering where we find these literary selections, and that information is actually proprietary. It's part of what makes our show special, so can't divulge that information. One announcement I would like to make, this is great, iPodder, the podcast software that we highly recommend here, it's the one I use personally, has hit over 1 million downloads, which is a pretty significant mark of popularity. The Firefox web browser has also gone over 1 million downloads, and so it's pretty amazing, I think, that iPodder is in the same kind of download category as Firefox. That's pretty exciting. And in other announcements, SGL podcast yesterday, well, it's today's list, but it's for the traffic yesterday, was ranked number 39 on the daily traffic on Podomatic.com. So that's very exciting. That's definitely the highest we've been yet. Highest of anyone I know having hit. So that's pretty cool. And also on yesterday, the Jedi Council Speaks was at 99. So they're back on the list. They were off for a few days there. So congratulations to us, and congratulations to Bob Christman, who made it onto the list. Tomorrow I'm going to be teaching at Finger Lakes Community College. So I'm going to be out most of the day, and I've spent most of the day today preparing for that. I'm doing history, kind of a technological and historical overview of Unix and Linux in particular. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I've taught quite a bit of Linux over the years, and I really enjoy it. I've been working with it a lot, so I think that's going to be I think it's going to be a really fun class. I think we're going to enjoy that. And if I can come up with a way to do so, I'm going to be recording that. I don't know if that's going to be really feasible or not. I've got an iRiver and a Samsung Yep, and both of them are able to record, but they both have built-in microphones, but holding a recording device close enough to be able to record with it during the entire lesson is going to be, during the entire class is going to be significantly cumbersome, and I don't think we want to do that. And so I may come up with some kind of microphone that goes with it, but we don't have one that specifically goes with it. And so not sure how well that's going to work out. But if I am able to record it, it is going to be posted over at our sister site, which is scottallenmiller.podomatic.com. Currently, that site has no podcasts. It's blank, but the purpose of that podcast is to provide the technology podcast. I do a lot of teaching from time to time, and I do classes, and I'm doing my best to have the ones we already have done converted into MP3 so that we can have them hosted over there, which I think will be really cool. I think we'll probably actually get a lot more traffic over there, as we'd be producing something that people are actually interested in, rather than the kind of random information that you get on here, a little bit more of a focused podcast. But right now, I've got quite a bit of conversion that needs to be done to get anything ready for over there. But if we can get the class recorded tomorrow, I'd love to be able to bring that over there. That would be really special, I think. And it will generate a lot of content very quickly, as most of my classes are 1 to 2 hours. So hopefully that will work out. Today we are testing out. I wanted to make sure that I was podcasting today. I didn't exactly have enough of a show put together, as you can probably tell, to really justify having done an independent show. But with the incredibly high traffic we've been getting on Podomatic, I wanted to make sure that we had something today to keep everyone coming back on a regular basis. I know from watching the statistics that a lot of people are coming without subscribing to the podcast. They're actually just going to the site and doing the downloads manually, listening to it straight off the site, which is great. I'm glad everybody's here. But it's a lot more work to keep people coming back every day. So have to do a little bit extra to make it worth it for everybody. But definitely get out there, get iPodder, be part of the second 1 million downloads, and subscribe to the show and subscribe to SGL2. And if you're into technology, subscribe to scottallenmiller.podomatic.com and get out there and start looking for a great other podcast. Because there's a lot out there. The reason that we have the new microphone here today, I started saying that we were testing it. This is a desktop microphone. So far, the show has been recorded on a headset microphone that I use. It's a really nice Logitech USB unit, which I'm very happy with, both as a headphones and microphone. But it's very difficult for more than one person to use that. And so I was in the city today, and I took a quick swing into CompUSA, which I do not recommend doing, obviously, but sometimes you need equipment very quickly, and they're the only place around, especially here in the Rochester area where there's very little competition. There's only so much you can do. So I ran into CompUSA, and luckily they did have a Logitech desk mount microphone that is USB, pretty good quality, and so I picked that up. It's about $27, and so if you're doing podcasting and you want to get a microphone right away, that is an option. Although if you're doing a show completely solo, for example, the Jedi Council Speaks, I think the headset system is a bit better because you can interact with your environment a little better without moving away from the microphone. This entire show I have to record without really moving my head because the microphone's in one place, obviously. When you have a headset, you're able to move around, read things, go back and forth to the screen. It's just a lot more flexible. So I think this is going to be not the way I normally record the show, but the reason I have it is we are 1 week away from being in Disney World, and Dominica and I are planning on doing the show together from Disney, and she actually said today that she's actually excited about doing the show from Disney and thinks that it's going to be a lot of fun, which is by far the most I've gotten out of her yet. So far, she's agreed to do the show. She kind of hemmed and hawed for a little while, but now she's thinking that it's going to be a lot of fun to do the show together from Disney, and I hope that everybody's really looking forward to that, because I think we're going to be able to bring you a show that's going to be tremendously more exciting than what we've been doing so far. I think it's going to be kind of a breakthrough for SGL Podcast. So it's only 1 week left to go. Hang in there, and I think you're going to love hearing about all the exciting stuff in Disney World. And by the time we're done, most of you will probably want to go to Disney World. I know that there's some people out there who are not Disney fans, and actually recently I've become far less of a Disney fan than I've been in the past. This is my, in total, this will be my fifth trip back to Walt Disney World. And I do feel that in many ways the park is actually declining in quality over time as they remove some of the best rides and some of the best attractions and replace them with things that are much closer to carnival rides and things like Six Flags, which quite frankly is just not where Disney's market is. I think it's a very foolish thing to do, just becoming a very large version of what everyone else already has and other places are very good at and probably operate at far lower cost. I think it's going to be very difficult for Disney to compete if they continue to do that. But they are a very large organization, and they do have a very long time before they get to the point where they're actually like Six Flags or one of those types of theme parks, amusement parks, I should say, and leave the theme behind. But they have diminished their real adult attractions. The things like GE's Horizons, which was it was aging. It did need to be updated, but instead of updating it, they removed it, and that was definitely. I've talked to many people who have said that it's either one of their favorite or their absolute favorite ride. And in the 80s, when I was younger, Horizons was my favorite ride in Disney World. I did it three times. My first time. Down there, and that was in Epcot in Future World, and it was a great ride. Everyone really enjoyed it, and I think it's really unfortunate that they decided to remove it. There were three rides that were very similar in overall style. They were small vehicles that you rode through, kind of an educational experience. The classic one, of course, is AT&T's Spaceship Earth, which is the huge geodesic dome that everyone knows as the symbol of Epcot. You take a ride up one of the legs of the geodesic dome, and the ride is actually up inside the dome. And in the ride, you take a tour through the audio animatronics, going through history of innovation, and it's just a really great kind of history of innovation. Children enjoy it, adults enjoy it. It's a ride that people can really get into. And even if you're not into innovation or history or technology, it's still a ride that really shines from an artistic standpoint. The Disney audio animatronics, regardless of their age, which the Pirates of the Caribbean shows that one of the oldest rides is still one of the most favored. You know, anybody who can appreciate the amount of effort that goes into creating the displays can appreciate a ride like that, and it's a lot of fun. And in the 80s, the AT&T Spaceship Earth was generally considered to be the worst of the three that were there. The second one being General Motors' World of Motion, which was a very similar ride, but instead of taking you through the history of innovation, took you through the history of transportation. And so it was kind of a theme, and they were both very outstanding attractions. And World of Motion had a lot of really nice exhibits in it, and again, all audio animatronics, the kind of thing that just appealed to an incredibly large audience. 8-year-olds thought that it was exciting, and adults thought it was educational, and pretty much everyone could agree that it was a ride that they really enjoyed. The third one being, I already mentioned, GE Horizons, which was more similar to Spaceship Earth, but took less of a focus on innovation through time, but looked more at how technologies are helping us today and how they're going to help us in the future. But the attraction was rather dated, which was very unfortunate. But at this point, both Horizons and the World of Motion have been removed from the park and no longer exist at all. And I think that's incredibly unfortunate because they were such great attractions. World of Motion did not need to be updated at all. It could have been left the way it was, or with very little effort, the ride could have been expanded or modified slightly to take into account more modern vehicles. I know that the attraction was a marketing engine for General Motors, and they didn't feel that it was doing what it needed to do. But I think removing the ride was not a good option. What they did put in instead is Test Track, which I have not yet had an opportunity to ride on, because every time I've been there, it's been closed because it doesn't work very well, which is obviously not a good way to have a extremely expensive marketing device to always say that you can't get it to work. But that's been the case. It's supposed to be open when we're there this time, and I will get a chance to ride it, and we'll definitely be talking about that on here. But I think the top comment will be, well, it's just not the World of Motion. It's much more of a thrill ride. It's not totally a thrill ride. It's supposed to be a pretty nice attraction. And I think probably having put Test Track in as an addition to the World of Motion would have been a much better use of resources rather than removing such a good ride with so much work that had gone into it over so many years. Horizons has been removed, and unfortunately I don't know the name of the ride that's replaced it, but it's a ride that simulates a spaceship launch. It's supposed to be pretty popular, but the problem with it is that it borders on being a thrill ride, and the end result is that the vast majority of people can't handle riding it because it will induce nausea. And can cause fainting and heart issues and back issues and all those kind of things. And so it's, especially in Epcot, it's not a place where it's really appropriate to have a ride that is so physically demanding when there's nothing similar to it anywhere else in the park. It kind of stands out as a ride that is misplaced. And the future world has lost most of its really great exhibits. And so having lost two of the best, it's a lot smaller park for people who are into the good rides than it was before. They've always had a couple bad exhibits. Kodak's Journey to Imagination, for example, has always been a very painful ride, excruciatingly boring and nonsensical, not enjoyable pretty much in any way, even though they developed Figment, the little dragon that takes you through the ride. It doesn't make up for the fact that the ride is just intensely boring. And just goes nowhere. It doesn't teach you anything. It doesn't inspire you to anything. You sit in a car and they talk about imagination. I've heard that they've updated the ride. It's supposed to be a little bit better, but I've heard that in the past and I've never been able to tell the difference. It would take so much to make that ride enjoyable that I doubt that that will ever happen. The only rides that are left in all of Epcot Future World that I'm aware of being of really high quality are, of course, Nestle's The Land, which was previously owned by Kraft, or run by Kraft, I should say, sponsored by Kraft, which is still my absolute favorite. The Land it tackles the topic of agriculture, which, being from Wyoming County originally, living in Livingston County now, here in upstate New York, agriculture is near and dear to the hearts of everyone here. That's great, and it's a really well done a ride, partially because it's not really a ride. I think the thing that really makes it stand out is that it's a working hydroponic research facility. It has sponsors, at least previously sponsored by organizations like the USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, and University of Arizona's agricultural program does research there. And I believe that NASA is involved, or NASA is involved vicariously through the USDA, but I know that there are programs there with NASA, and I know that New York colleges like SUNY Cortland send students to work there on research. It's an educational opportunity for students, and so it's a really, really great place because this is a real working lab that you can take a tour of, basically, when there's a ride that goes through it. And it's a boat ride, which is incredibly well done. And it's not hokey like a lot of the rides are, because they're going through things that they can't really show you, and so they're kind of faking it. But because they're going through a working lab, they took a very different approach to it. And it's just beautifully done. It's very relaxing. It probably is not as entertaining to younger children as a lot of the rides are. There is a small portion of it where they did audio animatronics and some of the Disney wizardry to make it a little bit more enjoyable. You go past a fake waterfall, and it's very nice. It's a very pleasant ride in the boat. You may want to ride it multiple times just because it's so nice and relaxing and comfortable. But there's quite a bit to learn on the ride, and it's just awesome winding through this large greenhouse on this little river on a boat. It's very well thought out, and to make the ride even more exciting or more beneficial, I guess, to someone who wants to learn about the agriculture, they have a program where it used to be $7 the last time I was there in the late 90s. And I guess it's a lot closer to double that now, but you can get an hour or an hour and a half walking tour behind the scenes, where you get a lot more in-depth information. It's really targeted towards adults and those who are really interested in agriculture, you're kind of behind, you're in the same greenhouse, and you can see the people in the boat going by, but you're up close next to the plants, and you get to go to the staging greenhouses behind and the labs where they do their work, and you can ask questions of the research students who give the tour. And so it's a really great experience, and in fact, it's far and away the best thing that I've done in all of Disney World is the additional tour of the land. And so if anyone is going, I can tell you now that that is an absolute must do. Even if you're not really into agriculture, it's quite a bit of time that otherwise you've got to fill with riding rides again, or with eating, or some other activity. It's one of the few activities that you can really get a big chunk of time used up in a pretty productive way, because you learn quite a bit, and education is good for everyone. The other ride that's pretty good, than other than the ones I've mentioned or the ones that have been removed, is Exxon's World of Energy, which has been updated. It was good originally. It's a little bit better now. It's not completely outstanding, but it's definitely one of the better rides, and I'm very glad that it was not removed. And it's a lot more audio animatronics, more of a ride rather than an educational experience. But there's quite a bit of education there too. It's one of the old school Epcot rides that still remains. The Living Seas, which is of course Disney's aquarium, which is a world class aquarium. Is currently being updated. Unfortunately, Dominica and I will not be able to go to it. I have been to it in the past, luckily, so I'm not severely disappointed. But it is being closed for renovations. It is apparently not the attraction that they wanted it to be, and so they're working on that to make it a little bit more entertaining. And I am very interested to see what they do with that, because it is a working aquarium, and so they have the opportunity to do a lot with it in the same way that they do a lot with the land. But they haven't done so much in the past. They've approached it more as a ride rather than as a working aquarium, an educational experience. And you kind of lose the advantages that they've often had with that regular aquariums have, that they should be leveraging. And so I'm hoping that they do that in the future, and maybe someone from Disney will listen to this and take them in a new direction. But that's there in future world, and is potentially a good opportunity to get more out of the park. They used to have a working zoological park, an actual zoo called Discovery Island, which was awesome. It was in its day my favorite zoo anywhere. I absolutely loved it, and I was there in the late 90s, last time I was in Disney World, it was still open, and they closed it just after I was there. They decided to go with the Animal Kingdom and use that as their zoo instead of Discovery Island, and I think that was a horrible mistake. I can come up with many reasons why. I'm sure they thought it was a good idea, cost obviously being one of them. Discovery Island was not a large attraction. No one went to Disney World because of Discovery Island. It barely made enough money during the day, I'm sure, to cover its expenses, if it even did. However, I think it was a tremendous attraction to a lot of adults who were using it as a way to get away from the kids. I think a lot of people used it as a way to make Disney World more educational. I think a lot of people used it as a way to spread out where people were during the day. Hundreds of people were able to go to Discovery Island and not be in the main parks during the day. And so it was a really, really well done zoo that you could spend an entire afternoon at very enjoyably. It was, personally, I believe, far more entertaining than the entire Disney MGM Studios park. It just had so much to offer, and it was so well done. And you still maintained a lot of the Disney feel, and yet it was different. It was completely on an island out in a lake near the Magic Kingdom. But I think that it really expanded the Disney experience. It made the whole Disney thing feel a lot more like a large, comprehensive experience that you could have. And I think by removing it, they took away a significant piece of the Disney experience. And I think it's incredibly unfortunate that they removed that. The Animal Kingdom is not taken seriously. They've done a very, you know, there's a lot of entertainment value in it, but from a zoological perspective, it's silly. The rides that they have that take you by the animals are incredibly hokey. They attach ridiculous storylines to them, and the entire time they try to make it into an adventure / action ride through a zoo. And most of the animals are hiding, by the time you get back, you feel like you've taken a ride that was meant to impress a five-year-old, but most five-year-olds would see right through, and you've lost the entire zoo experience. You can't do the things you would do at the zoo, And it just does not live up to Discovery Island in the least. And I think that the Animal Kingdom has a lot of good ideas in it. And I'm not saying that, that doing the Animal Kingdom park itself was a bad idea. The Tree of Life is a really great exhibit. There's a bunch of stuff in Asia I haven't seen yet. Asia was not open last time I was there. The Dinosaur Land, while not very educational, does have some good rides and some good entertainment. There are a number of shows in the Animal Kingdom, things that a lot of things that would not have been appropriate to Discovery Island or potentially anywhere else in the park. And so I think having the new park is a good idea, but I feel that it's mostly so poorly done, and it's so poor compared to what they already had that they actually lowered the overall quality of Walt Disney World by putting it in, even though it is so large and such a significant portion of the overall park. I think Disney has, in recent years, with the opening of Disney MGM Studios and of the Animal Kingdom, they've managed to significantly increase the total size of the park. But I think they've done so at the expense of those areas being so inferior compared to the Magic Kingdom and Epcot that I think they're lowering the standard, and it's hurting the park, I believe. It's at least hurting it from the perspective of being the absolute best. And instead, it's size, quantity does help. It is nice that there's more places to go. You're not stuck doing the same rides over and over again. You can spend more time exploring. There's more to do. There's more restaurants to try. More people can fit in the park without being crammed together. And those are all highly beneficial. But I think that making the mistake of making the park more thrill rides or more thrill-oriented rides rather than the quality and style of the rides that they've always had. The Disney reputation is built on Pirates of the Caribbean, the Jungle Cruise, the Country Bear Jamboree, the riverboat ride in Frontierland, the Haunted Mansion in Liberty Square, the Carousel of Progress in Tomorrowland, World of Motion, World of Energy, Spaceship Earth, The Land. These are the rides that built Disney's reputation, and these are the rides that are under attack, and even if they're not being removed, new ones like them are not being added, and this is, I just think, a huge mistake for Disney, because they're losing the audience they've always had, and once they lose that audience, Disney is going to be Disney for a long time. Disney World is the world's preeminent amusement park, but I feel that they're giving up their edge. And they are becoming a lot more like large versions of other parks. And obviously, they're still a very long way from that. Nothing compares with Walt Disney World. Don't take this as a statement that you shouldn't go and shouldn't experience it. Disney World is the largest, most amazing park in the world. It's absolutely phenomenal what they've done there. Every inch of the park is meticulously maintained. Guest services is one of the most amazing things. The park itself is run so well that, and customer service is done so well that it's worth going for the experience of witnessing how well they can run a park beyond the enjoyment of the park itself. And there are so many activities and so many resorts and so many restaurants and so much incredible food, definitely more of the world's best food than anywhere else on Earth. All in one spot, all very accessible. The incredible job that they do with crowd control and transportation and housing and feeding. The list just goes on and on of the things that Disney is the best at. And they do it not just at Walt Disney World, but at Disneyland in California, which is obviously only a tiny fraction of the size, but still a large park. Disney Tokyo, Disney Paris, the new Disney Hong Kong, I believe is its name, which is brand new, the Chinese Disney World. All the Disney attractions are very, very... it's truly amazing what they're able to do, and it's worth going just for that. And so I am, don't misunderstand me, I'm extremely excited to be going to Disney World for my fifth time, and I'm really looking forward to the 7 days that I will be in the parks, and I'm looking forward to reporting on exactly what has changed and what's improved and what's gotten worse and what we have to look forward to and what we have to hope changes. But we will see. Only one more week to go. and we will be there on the ground firsthand. But I can tell you that the biggest part of the plan is to be in Epcot almost every day, if not every day. Dominica is very excited to see Disney World the way that I do Disney World, which I think is based a lot more around the way that Disney shines rather than where it pales. You know, there are things that Disney does incredibly well, and those are the things that I enjoy doing most in Disney World. And so I think I am one of their optimum customers because there's very little of the Disney experience that I don't enjoy. It is true, I'm not very much into roller coasters. There's very little of the thrill rides that I'm interested in, but there's very little of the thrill rides in Disney World, even though I complain that they're moving in that direction. It is still a very, very tiny percentage of the total rides are motion thrill rides. And of the ones that are, rides like Big Thunder Mountain Railroad, Splash Mountain, Space Mountain, they are motion thrill rides, roller coasters and water plumes, but they are not of the type that typically make people ill. They are very enjoyable versions of those types of rides, and some of the best around. Even though a lot of people complain that they are tame, I think they're very well done and very enjoyable. And so I think Space Mountain is one of the most exciting roller coasters I've ever been on, or maybe not exciting, but the one I would most likely to ride many times if the lines weren't so long. that's always a problem in Disney World. But we are going in early November at the time when there's very few crowds, and the hope is that we'll have a lot of opportunity to get straight into rides. So stay tuned, and we'll find out about that and all the exciting food of the Disney Food and Wine Festival, which will be going on the entire time we are there. And we will be trying out tons and tons of food from all over the world, which we're very excited about. We rescheduled the vacation specifically to hit the Food and Wine Festival, which happens in the World Showcase, my favorite part of the entire park, where Dominica has spent almost no time. She's seen almost none of the exhibits there. She has ridden the ride in Norway, and she has ridden the ride in Mexico, and that is it. I don't believe she has eaten there at all, and I don't believe she has seen any of the exhibits, and she has definitely not seen any of the movies or any of the architectural marvels, or for example, in Norway there's a reconstruction of an early church, which is very well done. It's a very nice exhibit, and I'm very impressed that Disney is willing to give up as much space inside the park as they are for such an unpopular exhibit. But it's I think it makes a real statement that Disney's trying to be educational and trying to get people interested in broader things, and even when they're taking so many things away, that's something that's still there, and I'm very happy about. And there's just so much great food in the World Showcase that we're looking forward to trying out. And I've tried quite a bit of it myself. When Eric, Mark, and I were there in the late 90s, we were in the World Showcase all but one or two nights, if there were even any nights that we missed it. We would do one park or another during the day, and we would always go back to the World Showcase at night and spend our evenings there and eat our last meal of the day there, and quite often get a beer and get some pastries and just sit and watch the fireworks. And then when the park closed, we would go out. There's a back entrance there that a lot of people don't know about that leads right into the boardwalk area, and we would go and hang out in the boardwalk. And there's a jazz club back there called Jelly Rolls, or at least there used to be. I hope it's still there. I'm looking forward to taking Dominica there, where they do live jazz late into the night, which is very popular with the locals and the Disney employees. And I hope to get back there and try that out. So after all these years, it's been 6 or 7 years since I've been in the park for any length of time. So very much looking forward to getting back. Other topics I wanted to talk about, some podcasts. This is my big podcast, and it's my one chance to talk about other podcasts, I think, because obviously people who are listening to this are listening to podcasts, and hopefully a lot of you are listening to this through iPodder. And if you're not, go get it. iPodder is awesome. There is the idea of the podcast novel. This is something that I'm not sure how good it is. I'm kind of interested in trying it myself, but I'm not quite ready for that yet. I don't have that kind of time. I think it's a very interesting way to deliver a novel. As it is, all of my books, I do books on CD or books on MP3. I've spoken before about Audible.com. So this is the way that I do books these days. I think podcasting is a pretty good way to deliver novels. It is tough because there is no real financial model, at least not at this point, for making revenue off of books that are delivered this way. So people who are doing it are, they tend to be lower quality books, works that would not be published regularly. And so it's kind of questionable what kind of content is coming out right now, but I think as it becomes more popular, we'll see more and better content come out. But Eric discovered this is a podcast novel called Brace for Impact. And at some point, I think I will probably play their promo on here, not today, but maybe sometime this week. It is a very interesting novel, somewhat inappropriate. I have to warn everyone for adult language. I have not listened to too much of it, so I can't tell you anything beyond that. It is the adventure of Apocalypse Dowell and Mick Aloha as they set out to save the world. They are superheroes with no particular superpowers, and they are each other's arch enemy, but they have to stop the world from the evil stake-shooting robots, or something like that. The plot is very hard to follow due to how strange it is. But Eric discovered this. We listened to the first few chapters of it, and it's definitely, for those of you who are into the slightly more obscure and bizarre, this is definitely a podcast novel that you will want to try out. So the name of it again is Brace for Impact, and if you do a search online, you'll find it without a problem. If you go into the podcast listings, you will definitely come across it, and I believe that its website is www.freepodcastnovel.com. So go check that out. For more useful podcasts, something that I've discovered that they don't produce too often. I think they turn out a show about once a week, or maybe it's a little bit less often than that, a little less frequent, but is Public Radio International's The World, which is a pretty popular program for those of you who listen to NPR. And they have a specific segment that they make called Geo Quiz. And this is targeted towards a younger audience. And it's they tackle a specific subject on any given week. And they vary from really short segments to closer to 15 or 20 minutes long. So I've seen them as short as about 2 or 3 minutes. But they will... they will take a subject such as shark researchers in the Pacific near San Francisco, and they'll talk about the island where great white sharks tend to go and where research is done for them. And they'll interview some people that work out there, and it's just a little educational program. It's not very long. It's good for students. I think a lot of teachers would enjoy it, something they might be able to use in classes. I know that homeschoolers can find it very useful. It's a good way to get interested in geography. I listened to a program, I think it was this week, that they did a quiz on names of countries that have changed, and some of you would know, for example, Persia. Most people know that Persia is a fairly popular country today. I'm not going to give it away in case anyone wants to listen to that program and does not know who is Persia today. But they go through and do little quizzes and little educational bits, and so it's pretty entertaining. I think a lot of adults would enjoy it, but it's just a nice little sampling of the podcasts that are out there. So that is Public Radio International's The World Geo Quiz. So you may want to subscribe to both of those, and I believe you can get to PRI's listing of available podcasts and downloads from the NPR website. So check them out. And I also want to give a special hello to Bonnie Smith, who I had coffee with today, and who is a new reader of Sheep Guarding Llama and is interested in finding out more about podcasting. from a listener perspective, and is going to be hooking up with iPodder, and is going to be downloading SGL podcast, and hopefully we'll be listening to this show. This may actually be the first one that she listens to. And so hello, Bonnie, and welcome to the blogging syndication podcast world. Hope you enjoy it. This is Scott Miller signing off for October 24th, and reminding you that this program is brought by the color yellow. Remember that yellow means caution. It does not mean go.